Okay, Arthur, I think we're live.
All right, here we are. First live
Here we
episode of the
are.
Game Over podcast.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone's going to join us, but here we go. And I think this will be recorded so that we'll be able to have the stream later anyway if no one joins. But yeah, this is Game Over number 7 and our first experiment with trying live streaming. I'm also here at a hotel in Berkeley. We are here to watch my son compete in a climbing championship type of thing. So
Let's
we're
go.
here. Hopefully, my audio and video, I was having all sorts of Wi-Fi problems. I think the internet here is still not great, but hopefully we're able to get this going. And how are you doing, Arthur?
Well, I'm doing pretty well. Just getting ready for a trip to Vancouver Island on Monday, and then afterwards, driving all the way down through Oregon to San Francisco to meet up with some friends, and also
Okay.
pre-planning GDC in San Francisco as
Oh,
well.
nice, nice. Yeah,
What
we
about
should
you?
meet up. If you're going to GDC, we should definitely hang out.
We will
Maybe
definitely
I'll
meet up. Yeah.
yeah, we could do another like dinner type thing. But yeah, just for our audience, maybe we could go quickly over what we're going to talk about. So there's been a bunch of layoffs in the industry. We'll talk about those layoffs from Unity, Twitch, Playtika, Discord. Also, there is a mid-tier publisher called Nacon. I'm not very familiar with that publisher, but they also make accessories. And some of the execs were talking about how there were too many games in the games industry today. After that, we'll talk about the new Halo game reportedly in development at 343. And we'll talk about some of the rumors associated with that. Next, we'll talk about Epic, which has claimed the number one top spot for publisher MAU on console.
Oh my.
After that, the state of UGC games, a report by some of my friends at Novik, is a really great report. Definitely think people should check that out. And then we'll be covering SAG under fire for supporting AI game voice actors. AI took stage of CES and it was a mess. We've talked about China video game crackdowns before, so I think you're going to cover that.
Yeah.
Cheating accessory, GameShark is back. And finally, Steam broke its concurrent user records over the weekend. So, before we dive in, anything else we should talk about, or should we just jump right in?
I guess we should just jump right in. I mean, first things first, we can discuss that this is the first ever live stream podcast episode that we have.
Yeah.
And we're gonna be doing a lot more cooler, different things in the future episodes, especially with potential guests coming on as soon as this month, even maybe in February. We're gonna have a full-on podcast conversation about the games industry from different perspective, from young blood me and old and gold Joseph. So that's definitely something you gotta look forward to. But I guess right now, today, we're gonna look forward to the news. So, Joseph, how about you start us off?
So unfortunately, there's been a lot of layoff announcements, and so we'll kick it off by getting the bad news out of the way. But there has been a bunch of industry layoffs, and there's a publication called Benzinga, and they had reported that this year, 2024, they've tracked about 2,789 layoffs by January 11th. So just 11 days into the new year, and we're already into a bunch of layoffs. Of the layoffs, I think the most widely discussed were from Unity, Twitch, Playtika, and Discord. So we can jump into each of those in a little bit more detail. On the Unity side, PocketGamer.biz reported there were 1,800 layoffs, or 25% of their workforce. So we can see that the bulk of the layoffs actually came from Unity. Last year, the company also had already cut 265 jobs as part of the Weta acquisition and an additional 600 last May as part of the ironSource acquisition. And for anyone who listens to the Game Makers, Pixels, and Profits podcast, we actually had predicted that this was coming for Unity. And in fact, I think, unfortunately, I think there are more layoffs coming in order for Unity to get to profitability. I do think that Unity is in a bit of trouble to kind of right size their business, and it's going to be tough. And currently they have the interim CEO, Jim Whitehurst, who will, in my opinion, try to continue and try to right size the ship. It's going to be difficult. I think think that he's going to try to make a name for himself. So I think he's going to do whatever it takes. But in my own personal opinion, I think that I'm not sure if he's the right dude. I think it's going to take somebody with a very strong technical background and kind of like, in, you know, and you may or may not have mixed feelings about somebody like Elon Musk, but kind of like the turnaround that was affected on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I think that kind of a big change is going to be necessary in order for Unity to get to profitability. It's a big mess right now, and it's going to be very difficult. So definitely wishing the best of luck to the Unity folks and for CEO Jim Whitehurst. But any way you look at it, it's really going to be a very tough job. And we're in a different environment, which we'll talk about later in this podcast. But we're no longer in a ZERP environment. Businesses need to be profitable and actually be profitable. And that's going to be tough for a lot of folks. And we just did go way too overboard, especially during COVID times. Now, talking about Twitch, The Verge reported that they had laid off 500 employees, which is about 35% of their workforce. And last year in March, Twitch had already cut 400 roles as part of a bigger Amazon-wide restructure. But the business seems like it still has a long ways to go in order to get to profitability. And even beyond that, there are a number of execs that have departed from Twitch. So Chief Product Officer Tom Verrilli, Chief Customer Officer Doug Scott, and Chief Content Officer Laura Lee, they all announced they were leaving the company. And even beyond that, Twitch has also announced the end of service for South Korea by February 27th, noting that it just cannot run profitably there. And
what, completely?
Yeah. So Twitch is not going to be operating in South Korea after February 27th. Yeah, they were saying like network fees and things like that are just way too crazy in South Korea. So that is odd, especially since, you know, South Korea, especially for like RTS and certain multiplayer games like MOBAs and things like that. It's they're one of the most ardent fans of those kinds of games. But yeah, that's what's happening in order to get Twitch to profitability. And on top of that, Twitch CEO Dan Clancy also admitted that Twitch payouts were far too large. And so he stated that they had paid out over $1 billion last year. And,
oh my God.
And they had also just grown the organization just way too much. So Clancy basically said, quote, while the Twitch business remains strong, for some time now, the organization has been sized based upon where we optimistically expect our business to be in three or more years, not where we're at today. I think that's like the common theme that we're going to see when it comes to a lot of studio closures and layoffs, is that during COVID, there was just a bunch of linear forecasting based upon a lot of the growth from COVID. When the growth in games based upon COVID, there were a lot of companies that were about to go out of business and COVID really saved them. And then they just extrapolated that growth was going to continue. And so they grew their organizations. And unfortunately, I think now we're seeing the reckoning from all of that over optimism in terms of growth and things like that.
It's also from like the amount of investors they had, like so many people invested in these companies and now they're fully screwed.
Yeah. I think that's a good point, Arthur, where when we were talking about the ZERP environment where money, we basically had a free money environment. And so there were a lot of investors and things like that, that were just funding everything willy nilly. Right. And, mm-hmm. and so there are a lot of companies, a lot of game studios that were able to raise funding. And so what we saw were a lot of like seed and initial funding going into a lot of these studios. And then now that we're in a different funding environment, they're not able to raise their next round of funding and things like that. So unfortunately, that's the case. Next, Playtika. So PocketGamer.biz reported that 300 to 400 jobs are likely to get cut. The last set of cuts came December 2022, when the company cut 600 jobs or 15% of the staff. Earlier in 2022, Playtika also shut down the Seriously studio of about 250 employees who were best known for the game Best Fiends. I don't know if you remember that game, but it was a pretty popular game on mobile. And also, if the audience remembers, Playtika also made a play to acquire Rovio last year, although they eventually lost out to Sega, which wound up acquiring Rovio instead. And the last company in terms of layoffs that we'll cover is Discord. CEO Jason Citron announced a layoff of 17% of its staff, or 170 employees. So crazy to think that Discord has
a thousand. Yeah, it has a lot. And actually, one of my friends, so thankfully, he's actually survived the layoff. A couple of my friends work at Discord, and it reported me that it was mainly just product managers that got laid off. And so if we count for that,
yeah, who needs product managers?
That's a lot of PMs. Which I'm surprised they have a lot of PMs at Discord.
Yeah. Interesting. Prior to this round of layoffs, the company also laid off 4% last August. And on the most recent cuts, Jason Citron, their CEO, stated the following, quote, "We grew quickly and expanded our workforce even faster, increasing by 5x since 2020. And as a result, we took on more projects and became less efficient in how we operated." And again, this is a typical phenomenon we saw from COVID. Very common theme, you're going to hear it over and over. And unfortunately, when it comes to layoffs and studio closures, I think we're going to see more and more in 2024. It's going to be a really, really tough year for a lot of game studios, especially smaller ones. And ones that don't have like a strong cash balance. On the Discord side, they are fortunately not in any near-term trouble. They raised, I think, $1 billion. They still have about $700 million on their balance sheet. So Discord is fine, and I think they're okay, but they probably do need to spend a little bit more time just becoming more efficient, which seems like Jason Citron, as he stated, and the moves that they're recently making, looks like they're going to start having an increased focus on efficiency. So that's it with layoffs. Are you seeing anything in terms of your friends? You're in Seattle. I mean, I'm seeing stuff on LinkedIn all the time. I also speak to a lot of different game execs throughout the industry. And the word on the street is that this year is kind of, there's more coming. There's a lot more coming.
That's what I hear too. I mean, we just recently had the massive Bungie layoffs, and that's been affecting a lot of my friends in the Seattle area.
Oh no.
In terms mentally, they were not laid off, thankfully, but they knew a lot of friends and associates that were just completely gone the next day. And all they just say is it's just like a quick layoff. They just email you saying your job's gone, go find another one. I had a friend's position at Google in Mountain View terminated just last week. However, he has 60 days to find a new internal transfer, which is actually really a blessing in disguise in this economy. And he's already doing a one-on-one for a new position, but that's just another example. Even at Google, he's a senior engineer, master's from Georgia Tech, and he got affected, but at least he was given a chance.
Yeah, and I don't know. Have you seen like some of these like TikToks and things like that where where people they like film themselves getting
laid like, off,
fired, and stuff like that. It does seem like one thing that's a little bit disappointing with some of those is I think that some of these layoffs are not being handled well, right?
There's
definitely like probably better behavior that companies could exhibit when it comes to laying people off, where I do think they could be handled a little bit better. But you know, I mean, it's just tough all around. I'm sure it's tough for the companies, it's tough for the people. And I, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are just trying to do the best they can, but that's unfortunately the case.
Yeah, it is really crazy out there. People just making social media posts about it. Like it's a nonchalant thing. At this point, people are wondering if layoffs are like normalized at this point. I am just hoping 2024 would be the last year of layoffs. I hope everything would be normalized.
I mean, when we look at like the data, right? I do think and speaking more from the mobile side, one of the things that we see is that while IAP spend is down just a hair, like downloads and things like that continues to increase. So You know, there was like that huge COVID boost, but we're still seeing a steady upward growth. And so I do think that with a little bit of rationalization across the industry, the longer term trend is continued growth. And whether it's, you know, I think on the HD side, things are a little bit flattish, but certainly on the mobile side, things continue to go up and to the right. So hopefully things will be okay. And the games industry, I think overall does remain pretty healthy. So
yeah.
All right. So the next article is by gamesindustry.biz. NatCon exec says industry's problem is, quote, too many games. Is it just me? Should I know who this NatCon is? They're a mid-tier publisher and accessories developer. Are you familiar with who they are?
No, I was not familiar until this article.
Yeah. So the publication, so gamesindustry.biz interviewed both Benoit Clerc, who heads publishing, and Jack Clark, who is the president of NatCon USA. And the main focus of the article were these execs explaining why so many game studios are in trouble right now. It's not going to be, you know, we just already talked about a lot of reasons, and they're basically kind of echoing the same kind of sentiment. But according to Benoit Clerc, he states, quote, there are too many games currently on the market. We're seeing today the results of investment made after COVID, when the market was bursting and every game was making a lot of money. So there were a lot of investments being made. This is 2 or 3 years after that. So the games we're seeing now on the market were financed in that time. And there are simply too many for customers to be able to play them. When you look at Steam some days, there are 50 or 60 games released in one day only, so it's more difficult to get enough traction to expose a game. We're seeing releases that are without a day one, to use the old retail expression, without any exposure of a title that has been properly marketed. So yeah, I mean, just like we're saying, it's the common theme here, too much expansion. You know, we were based upon ZERP and everything else. Everyone was just going crazy. And one of the things that Benoit talks about is like the path to success now, in his opinion, is really to serve niche audiences. And the way he put it is, quote, you're in a different situation in the market currently when you have games that have nothing super specific to say to a specific group of gamers. And besides that, I think there were two points that he wanted to make is that NatCon is very concerned about escalating budgets based upon increasing player expectations for production value. And to some degree, I agree and disagree with that. And secondly, they believe that somehow there's a synergy between their games and peripheral business. So, I mean, on the previous point, I do disagree a little bit because there are certainly increased expectations of production budgets, but we're also seeing that really it seems that what players want more than that is innovation, right? Where we're seeing games such as Lethal, Valheim, BattleBit, a bunch of these games with very small or solo developers achieving lots of success. And so you don't really need that $100, $200 million budget to be successful, but you do need to provide a better game experience. And to Benoit's point, I do think that the thing I do agree with him on is like really finding that specific niche audience that you're catering to in order to be able to be successful. Mm-hmm. The other point on the how they're going to tie peripherals to their games business, I don't quite see that, but you know, I wish them all the best. If they can figure that out, that'd be great for them. Anytime I think any games studio or business can figure out a way to find, in finance terms, alpha, like a competitive advantage, I think all the more power to them. So if they can figure that out, I think that's great. I can't quite see the synergy between the two, but I do hope them the best in terms of being able to figure that out.
Well, they make a good point, but like games nowadays, you want good growth is just find a niche. Like Lethal Company found a niche of people that literally play games for the proximity chat. That's literally why it became popular, because of the proximity chat. People love it.
Okay.
BattleBit has a similar thing and it grew, but also BattleBit just caters to an audience that got tired of like too much live service Battlefield games.
Right. Yeah. And it's so crazy when you think about BattleBit in particular. Like, look at the size and the scale and the budget of Battlefield. And you got the paddle bit too, right? And it's just like, it's crazy to think how just the overall approach and the way in which that dude, I think it was a small team actually, but the way that they approached it versus a huge team. And if you do take that right approach, how you can actually be a lot more successful than huge teams. So it's not just about production budget, production value. It's really about, you know, to the point Benoit made, like really understanding the audience is going to be critical for games to be successful moving into the future, and especially in a crowded market like right now. Now, I think the other thing that people don't understand, people do understand though, is that the industry tends to move in waves in a pendulum, right? And so we, mm-hmm. with COVID, we kind of moved way too much into like overinvestment, you know, free money, overinvestment in games. And so we got all these games. But now what I'm seeing is the pendulum is swinging way to the other direction, where if you're a studio and you can just kind of survive, right? And sometimes that's what success is all about, is perseverance and being able to survive. Like if you can keep your game team alive and survive and get through this current kind of mess and launch next year, the year after next year, when the field has been kind of winnowed out, then I think that's you're really like starting a new game right now. I think you're really going to, from a timing perspective, you're starting at a great time when so many of the folks I know are cutting new game development budgets. They're cutting teams, cutting like their future pipelines, because they're afraid of the current market. And one of the things that I know as an exec from former exec from some of these big companies, like there's this herd mentality. Oh, you know, it's like the big companies are all reactive. They're not proactive. Right. So being proactive now means you should be investing now. You know, it's kind of like the Warren Buffett quote, when others are, you know, be fearful when others are greedy and be greedy when others are fearful. And so right now we're in a moment of fear. So this is the time when game studios and game teams need to be greedy. You should be investing now. You should be going now and just figure out a way to survive and make do with the cash and that you have. Because if you can survive and if you can keep your team together, this is the time when so many game projects are being canceled, budgets are being shifted. And so if you can launch, I'm not saying you're going to be successful, but you're going to be going into a dramatically better environment next year and the following year relative to like right now when there's so much, as the NatCon guy said, you know, so many games are launching now. All right. So the next article we're going to cover is a rumor, and this is from a publication called WCCF Tech. But the article is titled UE5 Powered New Halo Reportedly in Development at 343 Industries. And this publication is basically reporting on rumors and basically Twitter posts about the new Halo game. They say, you know, it's still years away, but they wanted to discuss some speculation about the game. And first of all, you know, WCCF Tech did report about a podcast last year by Season Gaming, in which those guys claimed that the next Halo would switch game engines to Unreal from Halo's in-house proprietary Slipspace engine.
Slipspace engine.
Yeah. And the main focus of this article, and you know, it's crazy, kind of like the world we live in now, where there's so much social media stuff and people like looking at different folks like LinkedIn profiles. But this person, Idle Sloth on Twitter /X, posted LinkedIn profiles of former 343 art director Justin Dingus that listed an unannounced Halo game that he worked on from April 2022 to March 2023. The point here being that this guy was saying, look, there is actually a new Halo game in development. So kind of trying to confirm that. And next, Inner Sloth also posted a LinkedIn profile of somebody named Ian Slutz, a senior character systems designer at 343, which showed on his LinkedIn profile that he has been building player systems and assets in Unreal 5. So again, the point being to confirm, hey, yes, there is a new Halo game in development, and it's going to use Unreal Engine 5. Anyway, take this for what you will. I just think it's interesting, like how much information you can get now. I remember there's also some, I forgot the name of this dude on Twitter, but he would go and he'd just be going through different game execs and game team like LinkedIn profiles and having like, you know, exposing things about different games and things like that just by searching on LinkedIn profiles. But yeah, I think it's kind of funny, but you know, hopefully one, I do think that's there is a trend towards kind of switching to Unreal, especially for HD games. I think the vast majority of folks I know are on the HD side for console and PC. I mean, it's like everyone's going Unreal. And I just think like, you know, there does seem to be a lot of internal reflection on whether it's worthwhile to have your own proprietary engine at this point and at this, you know, where we are in the world today. And it does seem like, you know, if you're going to go anything, at least on the HD side, it's probably Unreal. And yeah, that's basically that. Mm-hmm. All right. Next article is from Ampere Analysis, titled Epic Finally Claims Top Spot for Publisher MAU Share on Console. And so Ampere Analysis is reporting that Epic took the number one spot for publisher MAU, for audience MAU is monthly active users, on console last December, overtaking EA, who was previously number one. And this basically came because there was actually a massive spike in November. And so from this post, they stated, quote, total hours spent in Fortnite increased by around 146% month on month. And this momentum tipped over into December with a further 9% growth. In fact, within the month, console gamers spent more time in Fortnite than in Call of Duty, HQ, EA Sports, FC24, Grand Theft Auto 5 Online, and Roblox combined. And so, yeah, good for Epic. I think just anecdotally, you know, I've been hearing from a lot of folks about increased engagement and re-engagement in Fortnite. I think a lot of the stuff that that Epic has done with Fortnite seems to be working, and definitely worked in November and December. So good for those guys. Regarding other companies, and also covered in that article, Take-Two also surged to take the number three spot ahead of Activision Blizzard. And the reason for that is, although Call of Duty continued to perform well, Diablo 4 has been dropping a fair amount. And on the Take-Two side, there was the GTA 6 trailer. And there's also a new content drop for GTA 5 Online, the Chop Shop. And on top of that, they also had a PS Plus inclusion that also drove MAU. And finally, also LEGO 2K Drive seem to have driven an additional 2 million active console users, also helping to push that up a little bit more as well. Let's see. And on top of that, so the next article was actually more of a report. I mentioned that the Novik guys had created the State of UGC Games. And I think that if you have an interest in UGC, that's definitely a report that I think you should check out. The high level on this report, I mean, there's so much detail in this report that I think that that anyone with interest in UGC should check it out. But high level, they talk about Epic Games and where it committed 40% of Fortnite's net revenue, which is estimated to be about $1 billion, to an engagement pool for Fortnite creators. But ultimately, one of the interesting things is that external developers only will bring in 20 to 25% of that engagement pool. So a lot of the internal Epic projects are taking a big part of that pool. So it's a little bit overstated is the point that they're trying to make. Besides that, they talk about some of the AI efforts for Roblox and Rec Room. And for those who are interested in Roblox, on the Game Maker's Pixels and Profits podcast, we did cover Roblox in depth in terms of the financial analysis. And one of the things that I came to a conclusion on when looking at Roblox was that they are definitely struggling to achieve profitability. And really, I think it is this point on AI. I think that AI will, like, a UGC platform is like, that's like peanut butter and chocolate with respect to AI, you know what I'm saying? So like, if Roblox is going to get there, I think AI is going to be a big part of that solution for them to get to profitability and for them to drive, you know, additional revenue and things like that, and to enable further additional content creators on the Roblox platform. So it'll be very interesting to see not only like in this year, the evolution of AI, but how Roblox implements AI within their platform. One of the other things that the report talked about is Epic's Mediatonic team, which introduced new tools in Fall Guys creative construction. And so what we're seeing is like a lot of new UGC stuff coming into Fall Guys, which will be interesting to see. And at the same time, we've got NetEase's Eggy Party, which is a top 10 game in China. And so we'll see how they also lean on UGC content and how that gets pushed out to the West. And on top of that, there's a new competitor from Tencent called Fun Party. And so like UGC in terms of like this type of Fall Guys type of game is going to be interesting to see in 2024 as well. And maybe like a couple other points that this report highlighted is that in August, Rockstar acquired 5M, the server provider for what it's saying in the report here for most Grand Theft Auto 5 UGC. And when GTA 6 launches, I think it'll be very, like, we should all keep an eye out in terms of, you know, what happens with UGC in GTA 6 and how that goes. And clearly, like, some of the most, you know, when you think about, like, GTA mods and, like, NoPixel and things like that, those new servers, like, there's been so much innovation there that if Rockstar is able to do a great job with UGC in GTA 6, that could be, you know, pretty profound and have a big impact in terms of the UGC market. So that'll definitely be something that we should all keep an eye out for. And the final thing that they talked about is major game studios, including Maxis, Studio Wildcard, and Blue Isle Studios, partnering with Overwolf to integrate CurseForge as a platform for modding experiences for games. I actually did a couple of podcast interviews with some of the Overwolf guys, but I'm personally not that familiar with it. Arthur, have you used Overwolf? Are you familiar with some of the Overwolf stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. I've used it periodically in the past a little bit. It was a coincidence you bring up because I actually just read through the post saying, hey, thank you for the spot on the list that you're reading off right now. But I mean, I've used Overwolf. I don't use it every day, but it was a nice deep program.
Cool. And so, yeah, that's that's it on my side. You want to take it away with some of the news that you want to cover?
Yeah, absolutely. So after all that bad news, I got more bad news to spill on.
Oh, no, I thought we were over with that.
No, ironically, despite us being called game over, it's never over. So to start off this side of me, for all the folks familiar, the Actors Guild down in Hollywood, they've been on strike since last year. Actually, since 2022, they started it, and they've still been going on. And part of the strike is also involving people in the voice acting community for video games especially. And recently, this past week, despite months of trying to negotiate with top 10 video game studios that they decided to protest as of September 2023, the negotiations have fell through, and this Tuesday there was a deal struck. And of course, the negotiations fell through because the video game companies would just not simply engage. While some AI protection was established, it was barely minimum at best. But so the SAG, the Union for Actors, have struck a deal with Replica Studios. Have you ever heard of them? Who are a artificial intelligence voice technology company. Their entire biz, like, you know, we're gonna bring back dead actors so we can make them to voice lines again. Well, a lot of voice actors obviously are not cool with this. Like, hey, you know, voice acting is an art, should not be replicated by a robot. Unfortunately, they struck a deal that's saying it will allow video game developers to use digital replicas of actors' voices, even after they pass away or something like that. And every voice actor in the video game industry, such as the person who voice act Ash from Pokemon, or Steve Blum, who voice acted Mortal Kombat, God of War, and Damian Haas, who was voice acted in Halo and Fortnite, they have all taken to Twitter expressing their anti sentiments of this agreement that was reached this past Tuesday. And, you know, the union tries to say this will ensure there will be performer consent and fairness uses, but people worry about, what if I die, what happens? Because if you're in media, what it does is that they kind of technically own your personality, own who you are. So people are worried about that.
I personally think that, I mean, I've seen like the current state of the technology in terms of some of the voice stuff through AI, it's good and just getting better and better. And I do have friends that have been doing contracts with voice actors, and they will not sign a contract unless the voice actor agrees to like additional using their voice for additional, because like, you know, in game development, there's always changes happening, and you don't want to like halt production to like renegotiate something with a voice actor and things like that. And so I actually think, you know, if you're a voice actor, this is bad news for you, but like, I think that it's kind of game over, in my opinion. It's just a matter of time before, you know,
that's the
you
name of our show.
You know, you're going to be able to take voices from long ago. You're going to be able to just generally create new voices and things like that. And so I do think if you're a voice actor, this is kind of bad news, but if you look at the technology and where it's going and the contracts that a lot of the game studios are willing to sign, now I don't do any, so like, I don't have a horse in this race, but like a lot of the contracts that I know, some of the folks that I know are signing with these voice actors, they want all those rights. And there are some voice actors that are willing to sign those rights. So long term, you're not going to have the old days where, you know, you're paying tons of money. In some cases, I mean, I've seen deals for some famous actors where we had to pay like $1 million for like 2 days of studio, you know, like voice set. Those days are over, in my opinion. So
yeah.
If you're a voice actor, think about where the puck is going, not where it is today, and you can try to fight it. Or you could just say, hey, look, this is where it's going, and try to figure something else out.
The biggest core issue that Eric's article reports, and actually it translates further into the Digital Trends article I'll get to later, we're on CES, is the people who supposedly approved of this agreement with Replica Studios were actually uninformed that this was the agreement. And people are complaining. Okay. Wait a second, this is not what we agreed to. And a lot of people complain they've been lied to.
Okay, yeah, I think that's a different issue. So that would suck if that's what happened, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people were, quote, they weren't informed of or did not agree to the deal and opposed the potential use of AI to replicate the voices. So everyone is taking their voice, see what I did there, to Twitter, well, X, to complain about, like, we were not informed this is what the deal was. We didn't agree to this. And actually, it kind of makes sense. Like, why would 98% of them agree to, like, yeah, I can use my voice by AI? So some suspicious play is going down there with Replica Studios. Replica Studios is pretty new in the industry.
Okay.
Are they, like, have you worked with them?
No. I mean, the kind of like the voice, the AI voice services that that I've investigated, and I haven't used them a lot. It's just, and the most famous right now is 11 Labs.
Mm. What is 11 Maps? Is it just another AI voice? Well, it seems Replica Studios is trying to take it big, especially with controversies in the news, to make them more popular because according to Digital Trends regarding CES, they were mentioned again. Have you watched the CES live stream? Have you checked that out? Any cool technologies?
I haven't. No.
I saw that new Samsung like glass screen that actually looks really dope. And like these new vacuums that are pretty cool too. But CES, of course, the main stage, according to Digital Trends on this article, was AI. It took its center stage. And there was a lot of mess and ambiguity regarding it. So first things first is, of course, the whole background of like Replica Studios with the sad the studio Screen Actors Guild deal that they just had this Tuesday. But it started off with the wrong foot, according to this article, with NVIDIA. So they used the AI power to show off the expansion of its ACE microservice. So essentially, it's a tool that uses AI power to generate non-playable characters. Basically, it's really impressive. Like, you can make an NPC quickly that's voice acted to and ready to go. And it was very organic with the responses the player were getting in the game from these NPCs, as if they were real people respond to you like on an online game.
I think NVIDIA partners with a company called Convey. And actually, I have done a podcast interview. I don't think I've published it yet with the Convey CEO, Pernendu. But if we want to go more into that, I can ask Pernendu to join us at some point as well.
That would actually be really cool because AI has now become the main hot topic in video game industry. It used to be in the tech industry, but now it's like everywhere because it's like, wow, it's growing big and is gaining powerful and more talented. But that talent has to come from somewhere. And Digital Trends, one of the news outlets, asked out to NVIDIA, like, what is this training on? Where is it getting the data tools? Where is the data set? And there was an ambiguous answer from NVIDIA that set up a bunch of controversies by saying there's no simple answer. And then NVIDIA received massive backlash on social media. And finally, they reached back out to Digital Trends, saying that ACE, the same software used to make these NPCs, are trained on data it has rights to that are commercially safe. And of course, this is really a convoy you brought up. But the main issue right now people have is this data stolen from other video games? And that's what people are worried about. Actually, players as well, like just specific video game players, like, this is this like organic or is it stolen? And that's what a lot of people are concerned about NVIDIA's situation. So that was one issue that happened. Then, of course, have you seen the AI hologram of Mario at CES?
Yeah.
So pretty much there was an AI Mario on the CES floor that was explaining to passerbys how to buy games at Target. And the thing is, Nintendo was not involved with this at all. And I can swim an oncoming lawsuit already from Nintendo coming up. But basically, it's just a Mario plumber. And if you look at an article, they have a video about it. Mario just has this disfigured voice trying to convince people to buy games at Target for some odd reason. So that was a bit bizarre there. In addition, MSI was showing off its new OLED monitor. And get this OLED monitor. You play League of Legends?
I play Wild Rift. I don't play League of Legends anymore.
Well, maybe this will get you back into League of Legends. The monitor has an AI accelerator that displays a mini map that automatically marks where enemies are. And it's advertised as an accessibility thing, but a lot of people are like, isn't this just cheating? And this is built into their new monitor. It's not like additional software. This is like a hardware thing. Straight up, like, hey, here's all the enemies, specifically in League of Legends, thanks to their new AI tool. So while CES had a lot of cool stuff, people are just worried about the AI. I don't know. There was just a lot of backlash regarding like AI because people were worried about the cheating in terms of game development and gameplay. I mean, do you forecast AI as being a very good accessibility enhancer?
I mean, I don't, when I think about AI, I haven't really thought about accessibility. I think more about like content, generative AI, and the ability for AI to impact like game development, content treadmill, things like that. But yeah, I guess there is certainly the potential for cheating and things of that nature, which I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about.
Well, speaking of cheating, Den of Geek has something to say about it. Also at CES, those presented was the Video Game Shark cheat device. So not sure if you remember, but back in the 80s and 90s, Game Shark was a prevalent cheating hardware you would put on your Nintendo 64 to cheat in video games. Are you familiar with it?
No, I'm not.
Basically, it just gives you a pre-programmed list of cheat codes for very popular titles on the platform. Okay. And they actually came back at CES 2024 to chase after AI technology. And here, what they're going to do is they're going to use revolutionary AI-enhanced technology, according to AI Shark, to mark a significant leap forward in the gaming experience, bring enhanced gameplay for beginning-level users. Unlike traditional cheat tools that manipulate hardware, load mods, and cheat codes, AI Shark focuses on aiding individuals and improving the gameplay over time. So this is kind of like how that one Sony Panda I went over a few episodes ago was like, change difficulty on the fly to adapt and tailor to your gameplay. This is pretty much what Game Shark wants to do. They want to get into the game to make it easier on specific parts for the player based on a AI model. And it's coming out to the Nintendo Switch 2 this year in 2024 in September, which has led to another thing. Did it just straight up reveal the release of the Nintendo Switch 2's date? Because that was unknown. And AR Shark has reached out saying, well, we assume is going to come out in fall 2024. So there's no official launch date from Nintendo side, but they assume it'll come out in 2024. So there might be a potential chance you might get a Nintendo Switch 2 accessory way before the Nintendo Switch 2 comes out. But I guess it's like a cool thing for like disabled people or like for kids that want to get into video games, but it might be too hard for them. I mean, for you making games like your extraction shooter, how do you think it'll be useful? Do you think it'll be useful for a game like yours?
I don't know. I mean, that's something I haven't really thought about in terms of accessibility, but possibly. But you know, it reminds me though that where there's a will, there's a way. There's like this famous Indian YouTuber who plays PUBG. He doesn't have any arms. He plays with his tongue. And so like you see the like videos of him playing PUBG with his tongue and it's like crazy. So yeah, so I do hope that accessibility can be better in general, but sometimes even if for some disabled people, like they figure out a way to get it done.
Right. And, you know, their market, this AI stuff is being marketed as assistance to those people, which I'm all for. I'm just wondering how it's going to get regulated per game, because these seem to be like universal, able to enter any game and help you. A lot of people worry about the esports scene, because if this is allowed, we'll be allowing esports. Especially for like League of Legends situation with the MSI monitor giving you a mini map where enemies are at that point, is that even like an accessibility aid or just straight up cheating?
I think that's dangerous, right? I mean, to some degree, like there are a lot of shooter games where cheating gets introduced and then everyone just bails,
right?
So this could really destroy a lot of competitive games if this technology does not get effectively mitigated in some way. That would be unfortunate, because that has the potential to kind of destroy a lot of games. Like, you're not going to play League of Legends if there's a bunch of cheaters, and it will just completely destroy the gameplay experience if everyone's cheating. So we'll see what happens, but hopefully I guess what we're seeing is AI is a double-edged sword, right?
Right.
It can be very helpful and it can be very beneficial, but it can also be to some degree destructive. And we'll see that play out through 2024 And there are going to be some industries and some studios, players, games, where it is, to the title of our podcast, game over for them. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, so it's gonna go both ways. And, you know, we'll have to watch that carefully, as I do think there's a lot of stuff that's going to be announced and introduced this year. Like the rate of progress on AI is crazy.
It is crazy.
So we'll see a lot this year in terms of what's happening. So if you're in the audience right now, you know, we're going to stay on top of it. So stay tuned.
Speaking of staying on top of games, China is trying to do the same thing right now, according to the Financial Times, trying to ease the video game industry fears of another crackdown, because China recently had those regulations that we went over a few episodes ago, especially leading to the shares dropping for Tencent and NetEase sharply. The National Press and Publication Administration's proposed guidelines has shocked the Chinese market. And they're trying to roll it back a bit in terms of PR to encourage further video game development. Also, Beijing itself, the government ousted the head of the Publication Bureau of the Communist Party's propaganda department for this situation that's going on. A lot of people were anticipating this, but a lot of people are a bit shocked and surprised that they're trying to roll back and try to be more east on it, according to this article. Tencent and NetEase, their shares have fell 6% and 8% respectively, where they were compared to last month's announcement. Right now the Chinese video game has been recovering from the rules that, you know, the authorities have been implementing in 2021, and seem to be further being artificially carried along by the government right now. But the press is trying to assure that there won't be another crackdown, but the industry right now, according to this article, is preparing for another one, and is trying to fast track consultations on proposed measures. Probably consultants from the video game industry, especially from Tencent right now, they'll be like, what the hell is going on? Our shares are down, please stop this.
It's kind of a tricky balance, right? Because I think the Chinese government really believes they don't like games, right? They think that games are actually quite negative. Now, the funny thing, though, is that when you see some of like the greatest entrepreneurs of our time, at least from the West, guys like Elon Musk and things like that, they were like, Elon's first venture was like a game that he developed. And you see him, he plays a lot of video games. And so the thinking in China is that games are actually destructive. They're a waste of time, things like that. And they're trying to balance that against some of their biggest companies like Tencent and NetEase, who are being, you know, really negatively impacted by these crackdowns. Arthur, did I lose you?
I am still here. Do you hear me?
I hear you, but I don't see you. But so yeah, long as you're still like, around, that's all good.
Looks like the battery just got exhausted. That's a bit embarrassing.
Okay, look, the
whole, got me.
Yeah, the initial live stream here is, you know, I assumed we were gonna belly flop on this, so it's all good.
I actually don't know why the battery exhausted. It was fully charged. That's interesting. I'll take a look. Maybe I spoke too much about the Chinese market.
It's all good. Keep rolling, because we can hear you fine.
All right, wonderful. That just sums up right now the current situation there. Do you think they're going to try and encourage like further bigger game projects? Like, you know how like Saudi Arabia and especially Iran, they've been funding games there. Albeit Iran's having a hard time with the video game industry.
Well, I think China, the Chinese game studios like Tencent and NetEase, I think what's going to happen is that they're going to continue to look to expand outside of China because of all the crackdowns in their domestic markets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, funny enough, the guy who broke some of this news, Josh Ye from Reuters, is a guy I know. He's in one of my private Slack groups. And so, again, you know, we need more of an audience, but you know, we can certainly try to bring him on to talk about this China issue as well in future podcasts. But I think overall, you know, it's Well, I think what we're going to see is we're going to see, I do think China is going to just generally continue to crack down on their domestic market, but they don't really care about international markets. So what we'll likely see is, as I mentioned, a lot of these companies continue to expand internationally.
Right. Well, we'll see what the future holds for, but a lot of people are still predicting they might do another crackdown. The government is saying there won't be another crackdown or encourage game developments, but we will see because the government is not absolutely a huge fan of games. So I'm really surprised they fired the main regulatory official regarding this. But speaking of game expansion, according to Video Games Chronicle, Steam has officially broke its concurrent user record over this weekend. So Steam keeps growing every year, and now as of this year, they have broke a record of almost 33.7 million players. Last Sunday were logged in at the same time gaming on Steam. That is the all-time high. The first time Steam passed 30 million concurrent users was during a weekend in Mega-tober of 2022. And its previous peak was 33, almost 34 million in March of 2023. And 10 million, almost 11 million users were in game at that time as well. So one third were, well, say one fourth were playing games. That is a lot of people.
I mean, I think for me, this makes a lot of sense because I think when we look at the HD market, meaning PC and console, I think there's just been a structural shift in the way that consumers play games. And so when you think about players, right, we've been moving increasingly towards kind of like like social gaming, meaning you've got a group of friends that want to play games together and they're on Discord. They jump onto a Valorant or Lethal or whatever, and they communicate in Discord and they play together. Now, that's been a structural shift away from console because you can't really do that, right? And so console has become more increasingly a single player experience. And so I have like a little bit of a not quite negative because I think consoles will continue to exist. And I think you're still going to have console experiences. But if you think about where the main form of engagement is going to come in the future, I think it's going to be on PCs. Like all the younger kids are on PCs, they're on Discord with their friends, they're playing these games together. And so the new model or mode of gameplay is really going to be about these friends that play these games together in a social way on their PCs and not necessarily on the console. So I expect to see continued growth on the PC market, maybe not as strong as mobile. And I think that the opportunity that exists for mobile is like, how can you enable that kind of experience on mobile and tablets, right? Because I think that's something that has not been pushed enough on in the mobile context, but is clearly a major mode of gameplay by younger folks. It is like this, kind of social group playing together. And when you have that, that also changes a lot of the dynamics and the way that games should be marketed and in the ways that games should be designed. And that's something that hasn't really like filtered through game development studios. And I think there's still a lot of, especially like these old school guys. And as an old gaming exec that talked to a lot of these like old school console devs, it's just so hard. Like, I'm here speaking to you, Arthur, and doing stuff with you because I need to understand the new generation. These old guys, man, they're like stuck in the past. They can't think about new ways of doing things. They're just trying to do stuff like they've been doing for the past 20 years, and they're so mentally stuck that I don't think that they're going to be able to jump on and really understand how to make new games that are catered towards these new modes of gameplay by players in the social kind of way.
Right.
I don't know if you agree with that, Arthur. Like what like you are in this younger demographic. Is that how you're playing or what do you think?
I would say so. I would say so. I mean, like, this article goes on to mention, like, there's a record of 14,535 games released on Steam in 2023. So we're just, going about and just trying all the games. Like, all my friends now my age, we don't even finish, like, most of the games we play. I think just like an island hopping strategy for games at this point. I guess with the amount of games coming out, and the accessibility of it too. I guess that's how we play. Like we don't just stick to one game. It's our like little attention span. Like we gotta try a new game, or I guess that's the thing. We just get bored of games easily.
Okay. And we got a comment from Michael Johnson. What's up, guys? I'm here. What's up, Michael? Welcome to our first Belly Flop live stream.
Yeah. I'm done. I'm dead.
All right. But I think, is that basically it? Do we have anything else, or are we pretty much done for the live stream now?
Well, that is all the news articles we got to cover. You know, Steam broke some records. People getting laid off. AI is scaring people.
Yeah, China, your camera ran out of battery.
Yeah, China is easing fears and actually likes games? ? And yeah. Cheating is back with GameShark. I guess the only thing we have left to talk about is like, what are we doing personally? What games are we playing? And for me, you went over Halo, which is coincidence because Halo Infinite, I recently got back into it because of its latest season, focusing more on community-made maps. And the gameplay has gotten way better, the progression especially. And the customization is finally fully there. It's fun. It's enjoyable. I feel progressive unlocking stuff in that game. People that have played Halo Infinite upon launch, I actually commend you to try it once again with the latest season. That's the games I've been playing. How about you, Joseph?
I mean, for me, it's still Wild Rift. There's a bunch of games that are on my to-do list to check out, but I haven't checked them out yet. But, you know, I'm really looking at a lot of different variations of Extraction and how Extraction is being applied to a bunch of different games. And I do think on the HD side is on PC, there's a lot of different variations being tried in terms of like Extraction models there, so I'll try those out and report back next week in terms of how some of those games play. But yeah, not too much over the last week, as I've been really busy with work and things like that.
Awesome. Well, anything else?
No, I think that's it. I don't know, what do you think? Next week, should we try a different time? I'm not sure if there's a lot of people available on Sunday. Should we shoot for like a different tonight? Day or
like at night?
I don't know, but yeah, maybe we should think about a different time or something like that. But yeah, well, we can figure that out later. But anyway, I think that's it, right? So for our audience, there it is.
Ooh, and... Michael,
oh, yeah. There's a Web3 game, Shrapnel. Yeah, all right. so yeah, I'll try and check that game out as well.
I'll take a look at it too. Thank you, Michael.
All right. Well, there we go. That's it. We'll catch you guys next time. We may or may not be at the same time, but our first live stream experiment is over. Catch y'all later. Bye.
I'll fully charge battery next time.
Okay.
All right. See y'all.